Buccaneers fans, hopefully you are enjoying the bye week, although it's been very stressful with the team going into the tank. Hopefully they can climb their way out. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Bill Curry Ford. Now, if you're car shopping, it can be draining. It's an exciting time of year. A lot of offers out there. Just popped at BillCurryFord.com. Black Friday starts now. Get an additional $1,500 off any vehicle purchase. That is savings on top of their internet pricing. It's on. Get there, BillCurryFord.com. That is the family name, Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E, Bill Curry Ford. General Manager Sean Sullivan of Bill Curry Ford. He's our JoeBucksFan.com draft guru. You can reach out to him directly for the Ira Kaufman discount. And his team is fantastic. They're going to take care of you as best they can in every way they can. And Sean will get involved. Don't hesitate to reach out to him as your best Bucks fan in the car business. And he'll talk football with you and he'll help you out. BillCurryFord.com. Don't worry. Drive Curry. Check out those Black Friday savings right now. And our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration, we talk about them, but it is so important. It is so critical to know exactly what you're going to do when you have a disaster in your property. Flood, water under the sink, mold, flood you don't even know about, fire, storm damage. You've got to call them first when you have that problem. 24/7, call them up, and they're going to come out and do a free evaluation at your property, so you'll know exactly what's going on. They can be your offensive coordinator with these corrupt insurance companies, and they will battle to get what you need to fix your property and get it back to where it was or much better, hopefully. Florida's Elite Restoration, they've got 5-star Google reviews across the board. Check them out. Research them. Owner Josh Martin is fantastic. He will give you an Ira Kaufman discount if you mention Joe Bucks Fan or Ira when you first call them when you have that problem. So make all these notes. Get to their website now so you know what they're all about and you're ready and protected and feeling good about protecting your property with Florida's Elite Restoration. All right, I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeCamper is here, and the sage is not. Lee, this is going to be an interesting episode. Ira, we can finally reveal, got to go on a very special vacation. When he comes back, he will tell us about it, but he's already back in town. We don't need anybody raiding his house or anything like that. Sage is back. He's safe, but Sage literally had vacations canceled 3 times for family things that came up. 3 in a row, so we're really happy for him. Can't wait till he tells us some of the strange things that happened to him on this trip. Should be fun. And of course, he's caught up on the Buccaneers. He's very excited to be doing that this weekend. And we look forward to hearing from him. But now we're going to chop it up, as Ira would say, Lee. No holds barred here. This is a crossroads time for the Buccaneers. I know it's been very troubling for you. You've been throwing things. How you doing?
Oh, man, these one-score losses are driving me crazy. And I wrote this Friday morning on JoeBucksFan.com, Steve. If the Bucks would have just won one of these one-score games, they'd probably be tied for the lead at NFC South. Just one of these freaking games.
Yeah, it's sad. If they beat Atlanta, they'd be tied. Exactly, 5-5 each team. But you know what? That's what the crappy teams do every year. At the end of the year, the GMs get up there and say, and the Bucks did this with Josh McCown. They did this, I believe it happened in the Dirk Cutter era. Oh, well, you know, we lost 6-1 score games. Well, that doesn't mean crap. Winning is winning. Winning is what separates. We always hear how not much separates these teams. Well, sometimes it's players, sometimes it's coaches, but we know just from being around and from playing ball as a kid, you know that there are some kids who always win, some coaches who always win, and some who don't. The close game argument never works for me, but it's frustrating in the season. I mean, that 49ers game, you're driving for the win. You have them on the ropes. The defensive line of the 49ers looks wiped out because the Bucs are pounding the ball. It's 90 degrees. They're giving up chunk yards on the ground. They couldn't do it.
Well, one of the reasons that I think we've gone over this, no Bucky Irving. If you're going to, I understand why Cone had, and by the way, that was probably Cone's, I wouldn't say worst game, but his only less than good game, if that makes sense. He wasn't on top of his game Sunday. Previously, you know, like Kansas City, I thought he was dynamite, you know, what he was doing with the lesser team. But I get why they wanted White on the field because he's more versatile. He can block. But if you knew you were going to run the ball, and you obviously did know that, why the hell didn't you have your best running back?
Just to clarify, he was out there a bit. They didn't use.
Didn't touch the ball, yeah.
They had two running back sets for certain times.
I was talking down in the goal line when they had first and goal.
It's hard to understand. And look, they like Rashad White more than we do. and that's why he's out there. The blocking thing, I don't have a problem with Bucky Irving's blocking. I can't sit there and say, oh, man, he gets blown up all the time. So is Rashad White better at blocking so much that Bucky Irving should be off the field? I don't think so. You don't think so.
I think it's the receiving element.
But Bucky Irving has shown the exact incredible hands that Rashad White has.
Oh, he's got good hands. Rashad White's a borderline home run hitter when he gets the ball outside.
No, absolutely. Just the way they use these guys, though, the runs up the middle, one.
That's a Bucky run.
Yeah, there were two of them, and I think one didn't count, but, penalty or whatever it was.
Speaking of one-score games.
For him to not get the ball after the 11:50 mark of the fourth quarter, that's a crime.
That's a crime.
It's criminal, but that's also on Todd Bowles. It's on
Liam. Yeah, he's the head guy.
He's the head guy.
Like, Liam, get him out there.
And, you know, Baker Mayfield, maybe he checked out of a couple of plays for Bucky, but it's also on Baker to get the sense of, hey, Bucky's our playmaker. Who was the big playmaker on the field in that game? It wasn't the wide receivers. Wasn't Kate Otten who they were taking out of the game. He was the most effective guy. Yes, Rashad White, you made the big catch on the fourth down with, you know, Baker Mayfield holding off Bosa, and White has done some good things, but it's an example of how close they are, and maybe it's coaching mistakes.
Well, back to your one-score game philosophy. It drove you nuts whenever Dirk Cutter said that, and I think Cutter was saying it more out of employment and preservation than anything else. But you're right. You know, okay, you were in all these one-score games. Why didn't you win it? Does the talent really suck? Did you put the players in the right position to make plays? So your argument is dead on that at the end of the day or the end of the game or the end of the drive, it's on the coach.
In 2017, the Bucks were 3-7 in one-score games. I don't find that meaningful or important. You know, I really don't. Okay, you didn't get blown out. Congratulations. It can't apply. So,
well, the NFL is a one-score game anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so Liam Cohen, you're giving him a fumble for this past game. I think he's done a great job. But what I don't understand,
overall,
and what we're never going to get a direct answer to, is why Rakim Jarrett and Ryan Miller got the majority of the wide receiver snaps against the 49ers. We are never going to get a truthful answer to that. I don't know what it is. I don't know if somebody's annoyed with Trey Palmer. I don't know if it's a practice issue. Sterling Shepard played a lot, but those guys still played more. You're throwing to Rakim Jarrett with the game on the line. Doesn't mean he can't catch the ball, but these guys haven't been in those situations before. It's not what you want to be doing. And we saw against the Chiefs trying to, you know, throw to Ryan Miller in a key spot. Ugh. You know, your odds are low when you're targeting a guy like that. So, you know, it's frustrating. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're going to get Mike Evans back. We've heard some rumblings. I don't want to freak anybody out. We've heard a couple of rumblings that maybe he won't be ready for the Giants game. It might be one more week. But who makes that call on Trey Palmer not being the go-to guy?
Trey Palmer is actually a much bigger question than just hyper-focused on the 49ers game. I'd like to know what happened to him overall. His targets are way down, like less than half of last year's. I don't know what the deal is with that. I know they've tried to make Jalen McMillan almost forced to be the number three guy. Hasn't really lived up to it. That is a bigger question because of this. Someone that is involved in the Bucs offense told me this summer at training camp that they were hoping to get Trey Palmer the ball more in short yardage and have him use his jets. So maybe he gets a missed tackle, boom, he's gone. And I always reference his touchdown against the Eagles in the playoffs. That's exactly what they were hoping to use Palmer as. Now Canales used Palmer as a one-trick pony. Take the top off the field, which he can do, but he was pretty much a one-trick pony. Yeah, I know I'm referencing the play in the Eagles game, but that was the end of the season. So the Bucs intentionally were hoping to get Palmer much more involved in the short passing game, and honestly, that is Liam Cohen, short passing game. They don't throw long. That has not materialized. That has not happened. I don't know why. That's a big question. So why didn't they use Palmer against the 49ers? I think it leads into a bigger question. Why aren't they targeting Palmer? Nowhere close to what he was being targeted as rookie, mind you.
Yeah, a couple of theories. Opening day, we saw Trey Palmer not know the playbook. We watched him multiple screw-ups. That could be an issue. Maybe he's been struggling with this playbook, and that's why I said we may never know the truth. He may not be, but it's possible. We saw some evidence in week one. Also, this year, you've had great production from not just Rashad White, but Bucky Irving out of the backfield as well. They're basically averaging the same yards per catch. And the Bucs have completed a whopping 70 balls to running backs out of the backfield. That's a big number mm-hmm. for this time of year for 10 games. So maybe they thought Palmer would get a couple of those short things. I'm reaching there a little bit. It doesn't make a lot of sense, and they certainly haven't thrown the ball deep to him.
No.
So you're saying he could take the top off, and he can. He may not be able to catch it, but he could take the top off. They're not doing that either, which is a whole nother story.
With any receiver, yeah, with any receiver.
When you've got a good offensive line, good pass-blocking offensive line, and Rashad White at least is a high-level blocker as a running back, you could throw deep. They're not doing it. McMillan hasn't panned out yet. He's a rookie. He's been hurt. We heard Baker Mayfield imply that time that, hey, you know, get on the field kind of thing. You got to manage your body better. But Jarrett and Miller in a must-win game for the playoff chase, if the Bucs had beaten the 49ers, whole different situation.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Now. They're 5-5. They own the tiebreaker on the Niners. They probably would have knocked the Niners into the wild card situation. They probably have a better than 50-50 shot to be a wild card, but that's not what happened.
There's all kinds of questions here. I'll give you a little antidote, and this might freak people out. You know, we were talking about Palmer, then we're talking about how McMillan hasn't developed. I remember this summer, you know, I was talking to McMillan. He raved about how Trey Palmer had become his big brother. Like he was kind of teaching him the ropes. And I asked Palmer about that. Palmer, yeah, he's my teammate. I want him to do good. Both guys are struggling. Is that kind of like the blind leading the blind, maybe?
I don't know. I can't figure out the Palmer thing. He was in real good spirits in the locker room when I saw him, I guess it was last week. And he's actually a big car guy. I told Sean Sullivan and Bill Curry Ford about how Trey Palmer works on his own vehicles and is just a big car dude, and I'm trying to connect them a little bit. But great spirits, you know, feeling good. He had the concussion issue. He's just not being used very much, which has got to be frustrating to him as well. I understand he's the punt returner, but it's not like you know, they're saving him because he's an all-world punt returner.
I think part of the reason why the receivers haven't done that well, that's who they are.
Could be.
I have a saying: rookies are rookies because they're rookies, and an offshoot of that, backups are backups because they're backups. And maybe these guys are being asked to be number one receivers, number two, even number three, and they're just not up to the task.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, Palmer, look, he caught 39 balls last year, so maybe that's who he is. Right now, he's got 9, and there was earlier in the season when Palmer caught a touchdown. I remember Tom Brady was on the broadcast saying he just caught Mike Evans' touchdown because that was a number one receiver. That was a call for Mike, but Mike had called for a break, a breather, and Palmer went in for that play and caught the ball. It was a tough contested catch, if you remember, in the end zone. So it's not like he's been a disaster. It's one of the big question marks and X factors for me going forward because they can get production out of him, and they need production out of somebody.
Yes.
Because if Mike Evans comes back, understand how great he is, but the bottom line is he will be double teamed all game long when he comes back.
Absolutely.
And they need someone else to step up.
That's exactly, because they're not scared of anybody else. Unless you're saying Kate Otten's gonna turn into, you know, Travis Kelce.
Well, it could help because Otten's won't be double teamed as much as he has been now, but you can't count on Evans saving the day. His presence should raise up other guys, but I don't know if anybody's capable.
I agree with you, but let's remember, Evans, throughout his career, has had hamstring issues. He's coming off another major hamstring. Who's to say he doesn't pop another one in a month?
Well, Evans has had the hamstring issues, but he hasn't missed time. So this is like his most serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, hopefully what we heard a little bit is wrong and that he's on track to be back for the Giants November 24th in the Meadowlands, a must-win game for Todd Bowles, let alone the team, because if you run a 5-game losing streak, lose out of the bye to one of the worst teams in the NFL, you're done.
Well, you had brought up earlier the one-score argument. I've got another one for you, and it's about adjustments. I would think it's about adjustments, or lack thereof. Every year Todd Bowles has been a head coach of the Bucs, started out strong, went into the tank, damn near killed their season, then they rallied back. If I'm one of the Glazer family members, I asked Todd, what did you do this past offseason to help you prevent that dip? Now, no one could foresee Godwin and Evans getting hurt in the same game. Maybe that saves him, but still, I think these, you know, we just talked about the receivers. I'm sure the Glazers are going to say, well, why didn't you have these guys ready? Is that a Light issue? Is that a Bowles issue?
Well, the pattern is the Bowles issue. I mean, Jason Light's not in charge of how focused the team is in October. I mean, you know, once that season starts, the GM is very hands-off. He's hands-off anyway when it comes to that stuff. But mid-season, that Light has no real influence as far as, hey, get these guys' asses in gear. It's just
well, I guess it boils down to this question. And this could be a Bowles, could be a Light. I don't know. But the team, the Bucks, the organization, they had zero desire, or at least the appearance, the image they showed, they had no interest in going out and getting help. None. Even when KJ Britt was sucking out loud. And it's hard to believe. It's really hard to believe that your defense went into the tank because a part-time inside linebacker, third-day draft pick, got hurt. I mean, that boggles my mind.
Well, it's fascinating to look. We know what happened with Servasio Dennis, right? So he gets hurt.
Yeah, third game of the season.
They went out and said publicly his shoulder injury was something he was dealing with before the draft, got progressively worse, and now he's done. Well, so you knew the guy's basically on a thread because he hadn't even played that much. So if you were expecting to play him 500 snaps this year, man, that guy's a time bomb. So somebody, I don't know who, somebody overrated Britt. You know, and that's on Light and Bowles because it's Bowles' defense.
He did play all right last year, but I guess the team's caught up to him.
Small sample size, tiny sample size.
Yeah, four or five games, yeah.
You know, and I've said this before, we've said it. When you come in with super fresh legs late in the season and you get your time, you're going to look faster, tougher, meaner because you're not worn down.
And also, other teams have the entire offseason game plan against
Right, exactly. We didn't think he was going to come out here and suck this season, but, you know, he is leading the team in tackles. He does some things well. He's not like the grand problem, but there's a lot of issues going on here. But look at J.J. Russell. Okay, the guy's slow, man. He's he's not an NFL player. I'm sorry. The guy's too slow. And maybe he can play, fill in a little bit, but man, is he slow. And Dennis was on a thread, and he was obviously the key to the pass defense.
Which is wild to me.
It doesn't make any sense. And then they don't replace him.
Yeah.
And you've got, they're saying this guy, Vi Jones.
Oh, that's a pet peeve of mine.
Is, he's not ready yet.
Just think about that, by the way. They signed the guy last November, December, and he's still not ready? Almost a year later, 11 months later, and he's still not ready? What have you been doing with him all this time? And if you're willing to publicly admit that he's not ready, then that begs the question even more, why the hell didn't you go out and get someone?
Well, so here's the thing, right? So Vi Jones, he was here last year.
Yes.
Practice squad.
Yes.
Cut him back and forth, whatever. So he's been around a while. I think I might have, I don't even remember, Lee. That's how Friday ended. I think I might have just mentioned that he was a rookie. Not a rookie.
No. He's been in the league three years.
Got in the league undrafted 2022. So he's not ready. We keep hearing every offseason and during the season how vital every freaking roster spot is. And now you got a guy in there who practice squad, otherwise he's not ready? Come on.
That's negligence.
That doesn't pass the smell
test. No, not at all.
So they have this disaster there. Now, Tyke Smith has played incredibly well. Christian Izzian, Todd Bowles on the Buccaneers Radio Network this week, basically saying Izzian, best game, phenomenal, played so well, filling in. So that position's not a problem. They're not getting from Whitehead. The missed tackles from Antoine Winfield are stunning. Something's wrong with the guy.
Yes.
I mean, it's bad. You look at it's bad. It's not him.
He's not healthy.
And we know the mess at cornerback with their down guys. Now, I was afraid to make the phone call or send the text because I didn't want to know. I didn't want to freak out Bucks fans on their break. Tuesday, Zion McCollum went for an MRI on his hamstring, and we got no update from anywhere. Nobody. Not even McCollum on social media feeling great, things like that. So, to me, that's a little bit of a red flag. If there was great news, the Bucks probably would have found a way to share it. Didn't happen.
You would think.
So I'm just guessing there. But, Josh Hayes, he actually did some good things in this past game. But you can't make three good plays and
suck the rest of the game.
Four bad ones, I mean, all is not lost on him, although he's small.
That's fair.
But Funderburk he came in playing pretty well, and now he's really not playing well. Todd Bowles even blasted him on the radio network, calling him timid. He said that we talked about it all week. You can't be timid. He's timid. But they didn't get any help, and here we are.
Well, what I found it rich that Todd Bowles was talking this week about, we're not going to go out and get any players. Well, no kidding. It's past the freaking trade deadline. Easy for you to say now.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that because they did just get Mike Edwards. And
off the scrap heap.
I understand, but there are still players out there that they're not.
Well, yeah.
There's no big savior out there, which you might have found at the trade deadline and putting in some resources, but.
Didn't Edwards get cut twice this month?
Bills and then Titans. Now, the Titans, I can't knock them with the Titans because who knows what they're even planning. Are they tanking?
I'd want to keep them then. I'd want to keep the guy then. You want bad players if you're tanking.
Well, you don't know if he's bad. You don't know if he's bad. I mean,
well, I don't think a guy's going to get cut from two teams in 10 days if he's any good. And I love Mike Edwards, but I think the Bucks. Is this fair to say that the Bucks are having buyer's remorse bringing Jordan Whitehead back?
It's too early.
Too early.
It's too early, I think, because I know he's dealt with a couple of injuries.
Yeah. You
know, most players do, so that's no big excuse. He hasn't been the same guy. I don't know, but he's got a chance to turn it on. Like,
yeah.
I'm a full season guy. Like, okay, I can't just start clobbering a guy like Yaya for two sacks when we know that he has, if he closes the season with a couple of good games and whatever, he could end up with 7.5, you know, and then all of a sudden, well, okay, he had, you know, he was okay. He played the run, he's tough, whatever. He's got no help on the other side.
Yeah, I've come to the conclusion that Todd Bowles or his assistants cannot develop pass rushers. I've just come to
sure,
that conclusion.
Sure, no.
I shouldn't. I should.
No one's going to argue with it. You've laid it out before. It's come true. You told us, say, hey, I'm not buying Yaya till I see it. They didn't improve. Tryon Chainka has taken a step back. Logan Hall's not an edge rusher, and we were told before the draft this guy's got edge potential, edge guy. Anthony Nelson seems to have taken a step back
yeah.
with his pass rush. Wasn't exactly great before, but he seems to be taking a step back. So we're going to see very interesting in these last games, because obviously a lot of what we're judging is numbers, right?
Yeah.
And the eyeball test as well. But in these seven games against crappy teams, except for the Chargers, mm-hmm. are they going to start racking up sacks? Are they going to all of a sudden look a lot better? Because if they don't, then you got to blow up all these edge rushers.
Well, right now, a couple things there. Yaya, I've got the stats, that he gets to the quarterback quicker than Micah Parsons and almost as quick as Max Crosby. He's just not finishing. And what we hear Bowles talk about with JTS, well, he doesn't finish. Well, maybe you got a problem coaching these guys up how to finish. Maybe, just maybe. I'm just going to throw that out there. Yaya, and I think there's something to work with. Like I said, these numbers,
yeah, sure.
These numbers that show he gets back there so quick kind of suggests there's something to work with there. My issue with Yaya, it's not so much an issue with Yaya. It was a cautionary tale, I should say. His numbers went down when he became a starter.
Sure.
And to me, that was a red flag. That told me, okay, he didn't have enough tape out there for offensive coordinators to study him. Once they did have tape on him, they figured him out.
You laid it out, and unfortunately, it's come true. But we still have time. We still have time.
We have time.
If you're shopping for a vehicle, you got time to go to BillCurryFord.com. At Bill Curry Ford, not only do they have all kinds of chargers there for your vehicle, but if you buy an electric vehicle from Bill Curry Ford, you've got a complimentary Ford home charger. They're going to come out to your home and install it. It's all part of the deal. You're going to get 24/7 live support. So don't be afraid if you're thinking of these
EVs.
If you're thinking of the electric vehicles, it's not just you're going to buy one and figure it out later, like buying a new TV. No, they're going to walk you through every step.
Well, like I'm buying a new TV?
Yeah.
Like what's this power button mean?
What? What are these apps? Who put them there?
What's an app? Don't you get that at Bennigan's?
BillCurryFord.com. BillCurryFord.com. And craziness said there's another storm out there. Now, hopefully it misses us, Lee, but it's a great reminder to everyone, Florida's Elite Restoration has to be in your disaster plan 24/7, and that includes if you just have mold at your property or a fire in your exhaust fan and you got issues in your attic. I'm not saying your house burns down, not wishing anybody that, but these things happen. I had an exhaust fan fire years ago. Florida's Elite Restoration, call them 24/7 immediately, as we said before. Mention Joe Bucks Fan or Ira, and when you get your free evaluation, if you end up needing them, you'll get $500 back, cash for your deductible, or just cash back. So, luckily, the state of the Bucks here, you know, fans are dialed in on Todd Bowles because, you know, fans smell blood, as every fan in every city does for the most part, unless you have a legendary coach, and Bowles isn't in that category. So we run our weekly Joe Bucks Fan coach's confidence poll. So here's the thing. I've said this before, but not everybody listens, so I'll say it again. The poll goes out every week. We pay for higher-end technology so people can't vote twice from the same IP address. There's some other mechanisms in there.
So, in other words, it's not rigged.
We do everything we can.
Too big to rig.
Not to rig it. We try. So, I don't leave the poll up for days like you'll see on other websites. It's there
for like 8 days.
It's there for 8 days or 5 days, and there's 300 votes or something. We do it a very close timetable. I try to do it in 1 hour. Sometimes I'll go to two or three because we have 1,000 people coming out plus an hour to our website, God Bless America. But the idea is a snapshot. of the fan feelings. Now, people come to the website at different times, so sometimes they'll do it early in the morning, different times. The idea is a snapshot, and I don't want the folks working at One Buck Place to start voting like madmen and telling their wives or their
like a company-wide email friends, go out, vote for Todd. Vote for,
exactly. And you know what? That stuff happens.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago, when we didn't have a lot of traffic on the website, many, many, many years ago, we used to be able to see that, you know what? A lot of the traffic coming in is from One Buck. Mm-hmm. It was a high, not a high percentage, but a uniquely high percentage at that time. So that's not the case anymore, but they're still there. So we don't want that happening. So in the two-hour snapshot this week, Todd Bowles, all you have to do is grade your confidence in Todd Bowles. 49.6%, half the people voted little confidence. 32% voted no confidence. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I've never seen it that low before. Even
Lovey.
Even at the end of the Lovey regime, that's really bad. Yeah, we're on a four-game losing streak. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, we've lost close games. People are upset. I never run the poll within 48 hours of the end of a game because I don't want the emotional reaction.
Exactly.
But here we are, and he can correct this, but I don't think there's much margin for error for his job. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I didn't add it up. When I added up the other day, and it still was not closed, I put it on Twitter, 81% had either little or no confidence in Bowles, and that shocked me. Because that's like you said, it's very high. I didn't even think Lovey had that high. Did Lovey ever have 80%?
I'll look it up.
But I'm thinking 70s, but not 80.
I think he had close to 80. Bowles ended this poll with little or no confidence was 81.5%.
Yeah.
I'll find the Lovey thing. All right, so Lee, we were both wrong. The final confidence poll for Lovey Smith combined the vote little confidence or no confidence was 66.72%.
Wow.
And now Todd Bowles is over 80. Now, you could say a lot of people thought Lovey Smith deserved more than 2 years. A lot of people thought, hey, he did a pretty good job with Jameis Winston, which was his number one gig. There were very little expectations that year, right? People thought, hey, maybe they can get to 7-9, but the end result was the Bucs were 6-6 that year, completely fell apart. The defense started getting worse, and he got run. But
oddly enough, the defensive coach had his defense tank.
But fans were hardly fired up about Lovey Smith. So here we are, and it's going to get ugly. It's going to get really ugly as far as the speculation and the war chance to replace Bowles from Belichick.
War chance.
Deion Sanders is coming here for sure. That'll be talked about.
And Belichick.
People are going to start to speculate, oh, Deion wants to go back to Florida. Deion's friends with Derek Brooks. Deion has Warren Sapp working for him right now. Deion's going to get an interview.
Deion's son,
but that's never going to work out.
Travis Hunter, no, that won't.
Man, I hope it doesn't happen. I know a lot of fans, unfortunately, want Bowles to lose. Maybe it's not a big percentage, but there's enough who want, hey, let's.
No matter what.
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
So let's get on with this guy.
Well, first off, I'm a Bucs fan. I want the Bucs to win, period. So that's point number one. Point number two, we're fortunate we get to know some of these guys. And the image that Bowles portrays on TV at his news conferences, that's almost completely opposite of what he is in real life. He's almost gregarious. He's a really cool guy. But the act he puts up, people don't like that. People want the cartoon character. They want Chucky. They don't like the stoic figure. Steve, how many comments have you seen where the first thing they do about when they bitch about Bowles is his personality? Here's the one thing I think that hampered Bowles and helped Lovey. You know, since we brought up Lovey. Bowles, Ira brings this up a lot. Bowles, bad, good, or indifferent, is always connected to that Cooper Kupp pass against the Rams in the playoffs in 2021, which basically killed the Bucs.
Sure.
That's like his scarlet letter, in other words. Lovey had the Dungy connection. People loved Dungy. They thought he was like the ultimate chip off the old block, so to speak. And they were willing to give him more time because Dungy got time. You know, they didn't fire Dungy after 1 year. So they thought that there was a Dungy connection there. Like with Jordan Whitehead. You know, we're bringing a guy back that we won a championship with. Well, Lovey, they're bringing back a coach who was part of a team that made it to the NFC Championship. So there was that element that I think Lovey enjoyed, for lack of a better word. Whereas Bowles came in with that scarlet letter already, and people had that against him. Then you throw in the personality, then you throw in how they tank in the middle of the season, how he doesn't want to get new players, and it all builds up.
And there was no relationship that we saw with him and Tom Brady, and Brady never really...
Zero. Apparently they're on good terms, because
I'm sure they are.
Through the grapevine that, hey, you know, Bowles texted me, or I texted Todd, or...
You know, we mentioned...
When I say Brady.
Yeah, we mentioned on the podcast multiple times and on the website that, you know, we have our photographer at the games, and I asked the guy many, many times, get me any picture before the game, during the game, you know, and he's out there well over an hour before the game kicks off taking pictures. No pictures of Todd Bowles and Tom Brady together. Mm-hmm. None. And if you search on Google, you won't find one.
No.
And
because we tried.
Very strange at best. We'll believe
it.
Well,
even in practice, you didn't see those two guys talking.
No. And you think about how attached Brady was to Belichick, just talking and all this other stuff. I don't know.
And Arians, too.
What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins being injured? Bad shoulder, bad right elbow. Unsure if he's going to play. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But a shoulder injury for a veteran quarterback is not a good thing. Of course, they got Penix there.
Bingo. They got Penix there. And you look at all these rookie quarterbacks that are doing so well. And many people thought Penix might have been. Not the, you know, they didn't put him up there with Caleb Williams. But a lot of people thought Penix was a damn good quarterback. And the only thing that held him back was his injury history. So I don't know if that's actually a good thing for Bucks fans if they turn to Penix. He may just light up that offense. Then the Bucks are knee-deep in spit, as Dumig would say.
He's a rookie. There's some rookie quarterbacks who aren't doing too well. I mean, look, the demise of Caleb Williams lately.
That was too predictable.
Different team, different offensive line, different situation. Doesn't mean he's not talented, but I don't know. Penix jumping in mid-season, that's tough. That's a tough spot. And they've got three tough games ahead, which makes this so much more fun.
It might be a tough spot. You know, Drake May's doing okay coming in mid-season. He's okay. They're losing, but he doesn't look overwhelmed.
Chucky, John Gruden, did a live sit-down with Barstool last night.
Let's do it on the way here.
During the game.
Oh, during the game. Oh, yeah, okay.
They've gotten all kinds of wacky tangents. And I almost thought, I couldn't tell if Gruden had been drinking or maybe he looked a little disinterested. Now they've got beers everywhere on the set.
He looked uncomfortable.
I felt like he was looking around saying, I'm 61 years old. You know, what am I talking to this 30-year-old guy for? You know, what the hell does he
know? Yeah, he looked uncomfortable.
Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. But he did talk about Drake May and how he thinks he's the next big thing. And real crazy on Drake May since you mentioned it. But the Falcons next three games, they got the Broncos on the road this week. Broncos blitz like maniacs. Probably not the best spot for a rookie quarterback coming in against that team specifically.
True.
Then they got the Chargers, best defense in the league, and then they're at Minnesota. Kirk Cousins plays. There's that whole craziness of him going back home. Anyway, they got three tough games in a row. So the Gruden thing, you know, he was back at the stadium. We saw him being announced at the stadium, sitting in the owner's box, and they wanted everybody to know John Gruden's welcome back in the house.
Him and Ron Wolf.
Ron Wolf, I don't know if that was connected, but we saw him up there.
Yeah, they're sitting together.
The Hall of Fame GM who was the Bucks head guy many, 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 many years ago.
The original general manager of the Bucks, responsible for drafting Leroy Salmon.
And Ira's buddy. I'm going to ask Ira to call Ron Wolf and say, hey, what was going on in there?
Yeah.
He'll do it, too. We'll get some nuggets out of it. So the chatter, the report was that was out there was, oh, this is an olive branch and a reunion. Gruden is going to eventually get back into the Ring of Honor.
Reconciliation,
whatever you want to call it. I got to be cynical on this, Lee. You've got, yes, he was welcome back. Yes, he was on the field with the Glazers. I saw pictures from Brad Johnson's Twitter feed, pictures together. They've forgiven each other. They're back, whatever. And I don't think Gruden would forgive them publicly.
No.
If he wasn't told, John, we want to put you back in the ring. We'll figure it out. Why would he do that? Well, I'm going to hug these guys who kicked me out. That's not John Gruden. But I got to be cynical, Lee. I tell you, you know, Gruden has this lawsuit against the NFL to open up those emails and get guys on the record, you know, have depositions and move his case against the NFL forward. He lost, but now he got it reopened, essentially, with the Nevada Supreme Court. I got to think that maybe, there's some information. Obviously, he's got plenty of dirt on the Glazers that maybe they were like, well, John, let's make nice. And this thing with the NFL, maybe we can help you smooth some things over with Goodell, and you won't talk about this and this and this. And then we don't want to have to look at angles of our non-disclosure agreement that you signed years ago. And who knows? But the whole thing is very suspect, I think, the timing of it, the way they're doing it. That's just my opinion.
I'm looking at it from a bigger picture. I'm thinking Goodell told people, be nicey-nice with Gruden. Maybe we can get him to pull his lawsuit if we dangle enough olive branches out to him. Maybe we give him a job. So I'm thinking it's bigger. For example, this past summer he spent like a week with Andy Reid. Well, you know, right. Clark Hunt's a heavy hitter in the NFL.
Sure.
You think Clark Hunt would allow that? Allow Chucky to be around his daughter?
Well, I don't know. Gruden's dangerous with his daughter, but I know what you mean. He spent time with the Saints as well and other places. I forgot the other team he was with. Doesn't really matter.
Wasn't New England?
But the olive branch thing is interesting. It makes sense, but it's like if they wanted to give him a job, they could.
Oh, very easy.
You wouldn't have to. If you're Roger Goodell, you reach out and say, look, who's hiring John Gruden as this hiring cycle, or who's going to make him offensive coordinator? The whole thing's interesting to me, but I have to put it out there. I don't know if anybody else has. I don't know. I don't listen to too many other people, Lee. But if Gruden is in the owner's box and they're going to reinstate him, then he has to be on their list of potential head coaches if something happens to Todd Bowles. Why would you knock him out? Now, we heard the rumblings that they were considering him in 2018.
Different game.
Different time, different scene. But the bottom line is he wants back in. He's worked with them before. He's a big name. He would sell tickets. He'd bring a lot of juice, which is something that they care a lot about. They've always liked the big name coach. And you could argue that he was doing a great job with the Raiders. I don't want to say great job. He was rebuilding the Raiders successfully. And, you know, then he leaves and they go, you know, he gets fired midseason. That team went 10-6.
He was doing the same stuff in Vegas that he did here. Terrible at personnel. Absolutely terrible. His draft picks were awful. And that's why when you said great, I'm like, He was doing an okay job with X's nose. There was rumblings that he was really pissing players off. Well, he did that here. You know, his abrasive personality rubs people the wrong way. During the game, I'm not talking about outside, but during the game, he would unload on players. But his personnel decisions were terrible. And I can't see any NFL team. Now there's a really good body of evidence, not just with the Bucs, but with the Raiders, that he can't have anything to do with personnel. And unless he's desperate, I don't see him taking a coaching job unless he has a hand in personnel.
Well, and that I'm glad you mentioned that for a couple of reasons. One, I guess a lot of people would argue that his draft in 2019 with Josh Jacobs, which at that time a lot of people are like, oh, no, you don't draft a running back in the first round anymore. That was successful. Max Crosby could be a Hall of Famer, drafted in the fourth round.
Who was the first round cornerback they took? He had such a grasp of common sense, he decided to pull a gun on a valet in Vegas.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Henry Ruggs situation, you could say they didn't vet that guy.
Well, I can't blame him for that.
No, but you could say, but the job is to judge the character of these guys in the draft. So they screwed that up, however you want to put it. And there have been other screw-ups for sure. The only point I'm trying to make here is he could come to the Bucs. I think just like Bill Belichick, there's a little bit of desperation. Gruden wants to get back in the league at all costs. And Belichick wants to get back at all costs to hit that record.
Somewhat.
Maybe not. But that's just saying.
He's not going to pull a Chucky. Well, I don't know if Chucky will pull this, like I just said, but I don't think Belichick would take a job, any job. He wants to get back in, but there's stipulations. Him again, he'd want control of personnel.
But that's what I'm saying. My point is that Gruden knows Jason Light, respects Jason Light. They have the same agent, and he has seen what Light's body of work.
And Light's seen his body
talent
of work.
On the field. Gruden was always obsessed with building an offensive line. When he was here, they drafted True Blood and David Joseph in the first round.
And had a good offensive line.
They paid a crap ton of money for Jeff Fain, and they had a good line. And they made, the Aaron Sears investment in the second round, who was great, but it didn't work out.
Cozy Coleman was pretty good for a while there.
My point is he invested there. So I think they could work it out. They could say, look, John, this if you're interested, this is the way it works. If he's not interested, that's fine. I'm not saying they would go crazy to hire him, but if they're looking for a new coach, if they get into that situation, I don't know.
Maybe. I think that's a road already traveled. Now, I did hear, you know, you mentioned 2018, I think, that you had heard they thought about hiring Gruden. I had heard they went to him before Lovie Smith. You were interested in returning? He said no. And then they turned to Lovie Smith. We saw how that worked out. But another factor I think you might be overlooking in Gruden's favor is Mayfield. I don't know if he likes Mayfield, but he likes veteran quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's talked about Mayfield on his new channel. And, you know, and Gruden, he still trends toward I love everybody. He can't help himself. And he's trying to, not limit his options. But how could you not like what Mayfield's accomplished?
Sure.
Because, you know, these guys, Gruden especially, they know the obstacles and that he's succeeded in multiple systems. But also then the question is, Gruden obviously top of the tree of the Sean McVay tree. Doesn't mean he's Sean McVay.
No.
But
or Shanahan.
A lot of same principles that may be an easier transition.
That's true.
So who knows?
What I'm thinking, but you know, I don't know how Chucky fits in this bar stool.
Like I'm not lobbying for Gruden.
Yeah.
I just think that they may look at him as a viable candidate.
You can't discount the
for
chance.
What ownership's trying to achieve, which is not always what fans are trying to achieve.
That's true. Yeah, I don't think you discount the chances, but a discount is in lemonade, but I wouldn't put money on it. What about this with Chucky? Now, granted, there was only one appearance with Barstool. He just seemed really uncomfortable. Just the body language. Just seemed really... And then more, I listened to that on the way here. I'm like, the NFL is uptight conservative league. What do they think of their owner or a potential coach, face of their franchise, hanging with these dudes? It just seems odd.
I don't know, but they've interviewed lots of coaches.
And we know that, you know, Barstool and Goodell are mortal enemies.
Right, but Barstool's also interviewed many guys who become head coaches, sat down with coaches.
Sure.
So I don't know. I don't know what anybody cares about anymore. I still can't believe the NFL is embraced gambling, so who knows?
I think probably the best avenue for Chucky to get back in the league, NFL films.
I don't think he wants to do that.
Okay.
I think he just wants to coach.
Coach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, in his mind, hey, man, I could win another Super Bowl and get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he loves the history of the game and all that stuff. I could see him thinking that. Historic figure, couple of Super Bowls. Yeah, that's what they all want.
Now, he has said, he said this on Barstool, he had Todd Monken in his office this past year, offseason, summer.
Yeah, I'm sure. Look, all these guys, these coaches come in, as they've been doing for years, it's entertaining. They know they're going to learn something. It's fun. It's Florida. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, well, why not?
So, yeah, come down, fish for a weekend, hang out with Gruden, yeah. Get some golf in.
It's not exactly a tough spot. Unfortunately, he had Kirk Cousins in, and so we can't forgive him for that. All right, Lee.
And he helped out New Orleans.
Look, Sage is coming back, so we're excited about that. We're excited to look at these games this weekend that could affect the Bucs' chances, but ultimately they just got to win. But there are a few good ones out there. Any final thought on the state of the defense, state of the offense, Lee, and then we'll get out.
Well, the defense is what scares me. We could be looking at, and you brought it up earlier, Josh Hayes did make some plays against the 49ers, far from a good game. But a guy you didn't mention is Jamel Dean. If he doesn't get healthy quick, I mean, he's on the IR. He doesn't get healthy quickly. The Bucs are looking at a cornerback tandem of Tyreek Funderburk, who I think at times Lawrence Funderburk would be a better option, and Josh Hayes. That will get a guy like Drew Locke and or Daniel Jones to look good.
There's no question. And you've said it before, maybe they can coach up Izzy into
I'd take my chances with him before I would those other guys.
And that could very well happen. I don't know how well Mike Edwards knows the defense, where they think, you know what, let Edwards play out. So if they got that desperate, none of these are good options.
No, hopefully.
Dean comes back. Just real quickly on Dean. So he now, at this point, his last game was against New Orleans. Four games that he has to miss for the sake of...
Yep, that's four games, not 4 weeks.
Right, four games for the injury reserve designation. So he's eligible to come back. The Bucs haven't made it official, but he is eligible to start practicing and come back for the
Giants game. We just haven't heard anything.
Saw him in the locker room.
Oh, he looks fine.
He looks very happy.
Yeah.
And looks promising.
Yeah, I talked to him, you know, just briefly off to the side this past week. And like you said, he seemed really happy, really chipper. He's not walking with any kind of limp. He's not walking with a boot. Doesn't have any crutches around.
I'd be happy, too, if I was making $10 million a year.
Yeah, that's true. So he seems like he's in good spirits. He seems like he's healthy. But he's on IR. Like he told me, he just shrugged his shoulders. Like, yeah, until I get off IR, I don't know.
We'll hold our breath on these cornerbacks.
Real quick, I'm going to make sure people don't come at you. You had mentioned that, you know, does Edwards know the defense? I could hear people screaming, what do you mean he doesn't know the defense? He played here before. Well, Bowles always tries to meld his defense every year so they could be using a lot of wrinkles that they didn't use 3 years ago.
Absolutely. You know, we were sitting here speculating he might play outside corner. There could be all kinds of different checks for that position, which he didn't play when he was here to begin with. So hopefully it doesn't come down to Mike Edwards playing outside cornerback. We got our fingers crossed like every other Bucs fan, except for the ones who want Bulls out. So they're rooting for a loss. But we're not there, and I don't think we're going to get there unless it's the last game of the season and we're looking at draft picks.
Yeah,
we're out, Lee. Can't wait for Sage's triumphant return.